Welcome to our weekly conversation around conversations about conversations.
Here we are again at Tech Theater Clubhouse Conversations. It's a podcast we created to continue our conversation because every week on Clubhouse at 12:55 Eastern, if you want to come join, we have these really, really great discussions with brilliant people who sit at the intersection of tech and theater.
The thing about those Clubhouse talks is they're only an hour and we always have so many thoughts afterwards. So we decided to share those, talk a little more and reach even more of our friends and collaborators. I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. I am a maker of theater and things on the internet. I love creating, watching, and of course, talking about it.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. I like to try and bring a tech perspective to this tech theater conversation because my background is actually in the startup technology world.
And so with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesdays, where we start conversations around conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app. This week, we were inspired by the Variety article from last week, if you didn't see it, about Jaquel Knight launching a company to copyright dance moves, which is super rad. And joining us to talk about those issues as they sort of relate in our world of theater was performer and choreographer Paul Kanin. If you don't know him, he is one of the founders of the Original Production, whose aim is to give school regional productions an opportunity to learn the Broadway choreography straight from the people who first choreographed it. That's a huge deal in our industry, right? Because you used to, it just like totally wasn't legal at all to recreate original choreography. So his company allows that to happen and allows original creators of that choreography to be paid for it, which is pretty cool.
It was so cool to listen to Paul actually talk about it, because it's one thing to like read and conceptualize like, oh, this wasn't possible. Now it's kind of possible. This is great that more people have access. But the anecdotes, the stories, just the passion and excitement with which he was talking about it, I was just like so rapt. And I don't know, back to like the power of storytelling, like we always talk about, like his company told through his lens was so fun and so exciting to hear about.
I was curious from your perspective coming from the tech world, like on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird was it or bizarre to hear that like an industry just didn't have any mechanism to license core IP?
Oh my God, it sounds like every business opportunity ever is exactly that. I think in that conversation, I brought up that comparison to like the early days of Napster and sort of pirating music using BitTorrent. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh yeah, like, it just wasn't possible before then, but technology made it possible for people to access more music without having to necessarily find the CD. Because I actually think access and cost were both in play there. And then all of a sudden it was like, great, I can go do this thing and it maybe ruins my parents' computer, but that's okay because now I have all this free music. How fun. Hmm. But that the second it became easy enough and cheap enough to just buy a song on iTunes or rent a movie from Amazon or wherever, I was like, oh, this is just easier. I'm not going to try and go find this in these like kind of wonky BitTorrent sites. And instead, I can just go get the stuff and pay for it $1 or $2 to consume it in the way I want it. So it wasn't surprising at all that this was the case. Maybe surprising that it took so long and that like it just wasn't happening beforehand. That was actually a question I was going to throw back to you, was if people wanted to try to do literally any choreography from a show and they had access such that they could, you know, make it up themselves or try to, you know, translate it from some video or just their mind because they went to see the show, like, was there any policing of it? Like, just was it not happening? I can't conceptualize the world before it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think that's where like there's a little bit of a difference between what happened in the music industry. So answer your questions in order, I suppose, or address everything in order. Like, I think the fundamental difference is that music only existed in 8-track and record and then cassette, right? And then CD form. And then there was the internet. So there was like a new form that opened the floodgates to a new product, right? Like, not that Napster was a product because we just downloaded it, but you know what I mean? A new BitTorrent, right? As a new way to like obtain files. Whereas in theater, it's not like videoing choreography is this brand new mechanism. Do you know what I mean? Or distributing that video through a licensing house. Like, that could have, to your point that you just made, literally could have been done 20 years ago. And what the role the internet plays in our story is that the gatekeepers can't. It just makes it too hard for the gatekeepers to stop the process from happening now, right? Everything is too accessible. And feels like one of these little tiny cracks in the sort of like terrible closed off ness of theater, and like lack of innovation that, you know, five families and a handful of producers who control our industry have managed for some, you know, 10 reasons to like stop any kind of thing like this from happening before. I think that's pretty interesting. And no, it's the story I maybe you had stepped away, but the story I told in Clubhouse about the going to watch the original production of The Robber Bridegroom, which is this really bizarre musical that like is like couldn't even wrap my brain around how what to do with it. Like if someone had reported us, like I actually didn't recreate any of the choreography I watched in that video, but had I done that, had I gone to Lincoln Center, watched the original production from the archive, recreated any of that choreography in that production, and someone had reported us to the licensing house, they would have been, the theater would have been fined like a huge amount of money, or there would have been a complete, like, you can't do this show anymore. Take this, right? Devastating. Your 2-week run is canceled, which like some estates have been known to do before. Neil Simon sort of most notoriously, if you do any, if you mess with his script at all. So yeah, it's, there's a ton of consequences.
Oh, this is interesting. It almost feels like a bit of a flip, and not exactly, like you said, a comparison to the music rights world, but that it's made it easy for the estates and for the owners and holders and licensees of this information to get it out there and to police it. Like, it feels like it was a very clunky system and situation for everyone involved.
Yeah.
And like zero incentive for the people who had the power and the ownership and the access to do anything about it. Because like, yeah, I guess it would be nice if all of these high school kids could, you know, have this choreography, but what a pain in the butt. I'm not going to deal with that.
Yeah.
And now it's easy enough for everyone to do the full scope of the process for them, from the filming to the distribution of it, to the payment of it, to then collecting of the royalties from it.
I think there was also like, this is, I don't know this 100% to be true, but in our industry, there's this like boogeyman. Video is a boogeyman, has been a boogeyman for 2 decades. If we put it on video, we won't be able to retain the rights, like first right of refusal for the rights for this to go to a film. If we put it on video, people will steal the choreography and start making, doing, reproducing the choreography, and no one will get paid for it. If we put it on video, this. But they were all what bad things happen. And for, so, and there was sort of like this lore around that everybody kind of like just bit hook, line, and sinker. Do you know what I mean? Instead of saying like what Paul has done, how can we build something that puts it on video and gets everybody paid and opens up, you know, all this extra good, great, amazing stuff that he was talking about, like being able to share the stories from the original cast members and all the amazing things that happen when you embrace and build a new business model. But like, I think that's the most accurate representation of my experience in the way that video has been treated in our industry, particularly being the person who, right, put the first Broadway concert live on video, was it's got boogeyman status. Like everything bad is going to happen if we put it on video.
I wish I had understand the like complexities and difficulty of this earlier to have better asked questions of Paul, and like, how did he even get his sort of foothold in this? Like, what was the incentive for people to allow them to film? And
Jerry Mitchell
is one person being like, let's go for it.
Dollars to donut. Yeah. He's like this incredible, prolific, longtime Broadway director, beloved, right? Who has a ton of power and influence, but like in a great way. He's friends with a bunch of my friends. And yeah, and Jerry Mitchell says he's going to do it. It's real hard to get in Jerry Mitchell's way.
So it still took someone from the top being like, okay, fine, you can do this now. / I really want to do it. So therefore we're going to make it happen.
Yeah. And oh, of course. So you wouldn't have known that when they were talking today, the two shows that they did at first were Jerry shows. And that's why, right? So it took the person whose show it was, who created, he directed and choreographed both of those shows that they were talking about, Legally Blonde and what was the other one that they said?
Kinky Boots.
Kinky Boots. Yeah.
I think it was Hairspray.
Oh,
was
Hairspray. Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. That's
yep. Nice. You're right. Yeah. They did talk about Kinky Boots, but yeah, Hairspray. Those were his shows. So there's so much more power in that because he owned a part of them, right?
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. It's fun. I've been wanting to, or trying to figure out what the question around gatekeeping is that I want to ask you, but I like can't figure out how to pin it down. So we're going to use lots of words instead of a few words.
Mm-hmm.
But it that just made me think like, oh, still a gatekeeper, like, right? Still the one sort of powerful yep. person that says, yes, fine, let's go for it. And you know, my longstanding fear of the unknown implications and negative externalities of algorithmic gatekeeping and algorithmic curation and algorithms generally, and that was actually driving my question to Paul, which is around like, what is the future of licensing and allowing people to sort of copyright and therefore distribute their dances and their choreography? Like, what is the vision of the future that you're trying to build? Because there's inherent issues in the current copyright system and you know, its impact on creativity and things like that. So I was just curious your take on the like potential for gatekeeping through this new lens that's now, you know, Paul's company.
I think that it's probably pretty twerpy, but I think that the future that doesn't involve gatekeeping probably involves blockchain technology, to be perfectly honest, right? Like non-fungible tokens, which is all anybody's been talking about in the tech community recently. Like the truth is you could make those videos non-fungible tokens that track who uses them and when they get used, and that person gets paid, you know?
It's funny. I knew that's like exactly where I thought you were going to go, and I'm so glad you did.
You baited me.
I didn't try to make you go there, but I was like, I think she's going to talk about the blockchain because that's like the only way to decentralize things right now. Uh-huh. The only known and efficient way and power of the internet, yeah, sort of way.
And now with the non-fungible tokens, right, which I think is the different, like the new piece that makes this potentially work because you can track ownership.
Yeah. Oh my God, we got to, what's the name of our token that we're inventing with this?
Oh my God, I hate it.
They all have fun names.
Oh my God.
They all have terrible names.
I hate it so much. I really wish you could get paid some other way than cryptocurrency.
I guess it could just be Ethereum or one of those existing ones.
I mean, it does make it, like it makes it tough, right? When we talk about theater, I mean, look, right? We talk about theater and the possibilities of NFTs. And like now I hadn't even thought of it till you asked me this question, but obviously in this implication, right? Video that's like an NFT. You already have a giant barrier. Let's say we do it, right? Because we love this nerdy shit. We have a giant barrier to overcome to even get Paul Kanin and Jerry Mitchell and then the licensing houses and then the producers to understand what a non-fungible token is. Your second barrier is, once you get high enough in the power structure, they're not going to want it because it crumbles their power. And then third, you have to make everybody fucking open a fucking Ethereum wallet. You know what I mean? Like, what? I mean, what the fuck? This is never going to happen. Like,
you got to start from the other side. Start with the TikTok teens. You're like, cool. Make your dance into an NFT. And
like Natalie was saying.
Yeah, distribute it around. And I think all those additional pipes outside of like, okay, how does an NFT then get like distributed and used and shared, et cetera, and
yeah,
integrated into, you know, iMessage and Twitter and such like that. So it like looks nice. All those like second order things once the foundation, the blockchain,
yeah,
that is the dance videos themselves and the ownership as being properly assigned. Because yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to convince the theater community to, yeah, download Coinbase or whatever and have their crypto wallet in there just so that they can make some money off of some weird things that they also don't understand. Like, it's never going to happen. In the same way that it took so long for this company, the original production, to exist.
Oh, I know. The frustrating thing about it, though, is like, so yesterday, or no, 2 days ago, I was having a conversation about NFTs and just like the value of something, right? Like that, as he explains it, because he's an investment banker, you know, the value of something generally is calculated by the future risk of, you know, being able to load, unload that value. And then, but this, like NFTs and things like that, we were talking about are really, it's kind of like what you talk about, like with value-based pricing, right? Instead of demand, or whatever, instead of, I forget what you say.
Margin-based or cost-based?
Yeah, instead of cost-based, where like NFTs, for instance, are like, it's like buying the Yankees, right? Like the Yankees aren't actually worth $5 billion. They don't actually generate that much cash, like, you know, but like there's something about owning the Yankees that will never change the valuation of that, right? And these feel like that in a lot of ways, that NFTs, I will be interested to see what the use cases are as it sort of, if it matures, but it could very easily just be a silly human demand thing, right? Because, and then it's gone because it's this value-based pricing. It's like, I made, you know, what's his face's first tweet.
Oh, Jack Dorsey.
Worth this much in NFT. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this theater thing is like a real use case for like NFT in a real business that really runs, that could actually be transformed, right? By like decentralized, trackable technology that that proves ownership. And it's really frustrating that like we don't have fucking 10 years mm-hmm. to wait for this. Do you know what I mean?
Oh my God, that made me just like, oh, I'm so glad that this company exists and like that they're doing at least something. And I wish I could retell the anecdote that Paul did on that mm-hmm. on Clubhouse of the, you know, the teacher in Brooklyn who reached out to him. I was like, oh, we want to do the thing. And I love what you do. I want that. Give me. And then like put together an incredible production. That was a terrible retelling. Like just not even close to approximating the details of the story.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry if you weren't at Clubhouse and you just missed it forever.
In its listeners, good form. I debated actually trying and then decided against it halfway through.
That's not really a... Well, anyway.
Jess, do you want to talk about something you said in Clubhouse that captured my interest? Was that you mentioned the two of you have talked about sort of the Planet Fitness model and kind of how that fits into theater and like why something like this is feasible from a monetary standpoint for schools or regional theaters that want to use the technology that Paul is creating. I just thought that was a very interesting comparison.
Yeah. Joe, do you want to maybe describe the business model since that's really a you thing?
It's my favorite. So Planet Fitness, Crunch Fitness, Blink Fitness Now, like they all have this kind of brilliant model where they oversubscribe, oversell their service, and they do it at an incredibly low price point. Make the barrier to entry super, super low, such that people are like, hey, fuck it, I'll sign up. Like, what's $10 a month or $15 a month? But then they never actually use the service. If everyone who had a Planet Fitness subscription showed up every single day, the whole thing would fall apart. They don't have enough treadmills. They don't have enough physical space. But they assume by making it cheap enough, by making it easy enough, that people are going to sign up, maybe forget to cancel for a little while, and it'll help fund the experience for the people who actually do sign up and do use it. And Jess, do you want to transition into what you were saying about how that applies with the licensing of movement and choreography?
Yeah, I don't know that the like actual like space-based part of that business model applies so much in the way that I was thinking about, but certainly like pricing something in that way is, I think, totally applicable and was what I was saying today to what Paul and Jerry are doing, right? Like if I'm a school and I've got to license a musical and it's going to cost me $18,000, and for another, how, like, if they can price it right, whatever that dollar amount is to access this sort of like package of all of the original elements of the show. So, like, Paul was talking about, like, you get the videos, 250 videos per show of all the original choreography and the maybe sets and the, you know, conversations with people that were involved in the original production, all those dramaturgical elements. Like, if we're going to trek all the way to New York and go through the hellscape that's making an appointment at the Lincoln Center Performing Arts Library to watch an archival video in a weird box where you can't talk to anyone and your hand is cut off if you're caught writing in your notebook, then like surely we're going to pay, right, another $1,000 for that package, whether we use it or not, right? I think that like there's a very, very similar approach to this, just knowing theater makers, you know what I mean? And what we go through to be able to at least watch any of the original material or access any of those things. Why wouldn't you add that on? Just can't be like outsized in its price. It has to be that model that you're talking about, Joe, right? Which is like, let's make it really, really attainable as such that we know every time someone licenses a musical, which we know happens twice a year at this many schools in the United States and six times a year at this many regional or community theaters and this many times, you know, a season at a Lord theater, they're going to always do that.
Yeah, I love the other element that came up across the conversation was just about the ease and the change in the behavior because it is easy. And I think your insight about the price point is so, so key too, where it's like, I can imagine the, you know, the theater teacher at the high school being like, yeah, of course, like I want to, aspirationally, I want to incorporate the original like dance, you know, steps into this. And like, maybe they don't end up doing it, right? They don't actually use any of those materials, but they like, they bought into them because of like mm-hmm. the hope, the vision, the dream. And because it was cost-effective enough and because it was easy enough to just like add it on to the thing they're already doing. So it's absolutely brilliant. And
yeah,
the change in the ease of acquiring that material versus having to like physically go in person to an archive somewhere and watch it. And like you said, if you're caught even thinking about the choreography, you get like, you know, thrown out of the room.
Mm-hmm. It's a really weird experience. Actually, I haven't been in recent years, so maybe it got better, but it was, it's a very weird experience. This is another question that I had, like, that I didn't get a chance to ask today, which is, and this came up when we were talking about how, so if you're going to license or copyright choreography, right, similarly to music, there's only, I mean, everything's a 1-4-5 chord, right? So, like, there's a lot of ripping off of music accidentally or otherwise. And choreography, too. There's lots of referential stuff. And it made me that was what the conversation was about. And that made me think, I wonder if being able to copyright choreography, because what it, I will say, what it sounds like to me is they haven't copyrighted choreography yet, copywritten choreography in the theater. This felt like, I don't think he ever actually said, we have successfully put copyrights on this and it's managed by the licensing house or there's an agency, you know, like Liquel or thank you, Jaquel Knight.
Yeah, it sounded like he was dancing around the idea that like if it went to court, we think we'd be able to defend it very well given this, this, and this.
Yeah. So let's say this guy in the Variety article, right, this choreographer, this landmark case starts opening the dam for musical theater choreography in particular to be copywritten because like Paul was saying, it's used in a very particular way, right? It's pretty easy, decently easy to protect. And it's pretty easy to detect and to sort of like write down what the use case is for it. And if that were to happen, which leads to the choreographer making more money over time, right? Incentivizes the choreographer. I wondered if it will change the way we make Broadway shows, because what happens now is that frequently, like Antoine was in the audience today and he does this quite often. Like I'm Sergio or Jerry or, you know, whomever, Susan Stroman. I've got like 10 dancers I love. Like they are just my dancers. They dance my style so well. So when I start developing a new Broadway show, I'm in a studio with them for weeks and weeks and weeks trying things because like our friend, the lady in Brooklyn, the rich Brooklyn lady, it's you can't just like move Green Men around on your kitchen table, right? Like when you're really working at your highest order in this business, even using the apps that are out now is not enough really. You have, right? You want to try things. You want to see how it looks on bodies. And frequently those people in the room are contributing to that choreography and never listed. And so then there can be, like Paul was saying, there's actually like a lot more openings for challenges to that copyright because of the way we currently make musicals. And I just found myself wondering if the pure existence of being able to copyright choreography would change the process over time.
Oh my goodness. Like it would be like companies, and I'm thinking both dance company and like, you know, LLC company would develop around the concept of creating these finite, patentable, copyrightable, choreographed entities, such that like if you are making all of this money from your amazing choreography that gets distributed through all these networks and money comes back through, you can fund and support the company, the entity that exists to then create those dances. Mm-hmm. Like a whole new business that maybe it does exist. I have no idea. But like couldn't exist in the same way at the very least, because there is like a guaranteed or at least a stable revenue stream from the licensable entity that is the choreography. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a little mind blowing. I'm trying to think of like other ways that like technology has been created and then around it, a whole ecosystem of things. And there's a bazillion examples and I literally can't think of a single one. I'm an excellent podcast host.
Doing a really good job.
I know.
Yeah, it's exciting though. I think my takeaway from today, especially hearing like you said earlier in this conversation, just that Paul and Jerry are doing this, that they've been doing this for a while already, that someone even let it happen, and not to mention now Disney and Cameron McIntosh are calling to like hear about what they're doing, means that the walls are crumbling, you know? And that future that Paul was talking about, where anyone has access to the conversations and ideas behind the choices of an original Broadway production and that choreography. If, you know, you're in Abilene, Kansas, and you're not ever going to be able to do, you know, like amazing, amazing choreography. Like, I don't know. I just think it's a really exciting world.
Yeah, that's a super exciting future where the accessibility to all of these things and all these stories is easier, better. And I love as well that you and Paul both used Kansas as your example for like the regional high school that wants access to something. So, you know, dear audience, we would love to hear what, you know, Midwest country city
Midwest you think. I know, right? Country city. So yeah, I got it. Okay. This is our New Yorkers.
I was going for like country as like the sticks as opposed to like the United States of America. So keep this conversation going around and around by continuing the chain. You can join us on Twitter, tweet at us at BWayUnlocked using the hashtag TechTheaterCH and share your thoughts.
And then of course, jump into our next conversation Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern on Clubhouse. We'll be talking the news and technology and theater for the week. Can't wait to see what comes up over the next 7 days. Raise your hand, jump in, and share your thoughts.
And if you would like to moderate a show with us, you can pitch your idea at broadwayunlocked.com/ch and talk to a really nice robo Jess.
That's me. We really hope you'll join us there. Every single person in our room is pretty badass, even though I'm totally biased. We tend to have the hard talks about future topics that we hope are going to lead change in our industry. And so, join us on Clubhouse 1255. TechTheaterCH is the hashtag. If you want to talk to us on social media, slide into our DMs. Just join the conversation however feels comfy to you. And until then, we'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.